Good afternoon. Farm news here on the Red River Farm Network on this Thursday, November 15th. I'm Kara Hart, along with Randy Cunnan. We'll also hear from Don Wick, who's on the road. The trade situation hangs over the entire farm economy. That's getting attention at the Minnesota Food and Ag Summit in Minneapolis. Don Wick has the story.
Agriculture will continue to struggle in 2019 unless trade policy changes significantly. Even so, Purdue Extension Director Jason Henderson says the trade issue has long-term implications. Henderson, who previously served as an economist with the Kansas City Federal Reserve, sees the potential to change the entire supply chain with this current trade dispute.
So one of the big implications is that the U.S. has been the provider and supplier of choice, first choice, for many of those countries. And so as we think about these changes in trade, and they switch their supply chains and switch rations or doing different things, are we no longer the supplier of first choice? That's a risk, I think, for agriculture. But then that means that we got to go out and find new customers, whether it's India or some other places in Latin America or Africa or other places across the globe. I think that's where agriculture, we've always found new customers, and we just got to continue to do it going forward in the future.
At AgriGrowth, Henderson said money flow has implications for trade.
Yeah, when you get money flowing into the U.S., as a safe haven or making an investment because the U.S. economy is the strongest looking economy out there today, that pushes up the value of the dollar because they have to have a U.S. dollar to buy U.S. assets, whether it's the stock market or whether it's investing in a company or various different things. And so with that high value of the dollar, that limits our competitiveness on the global market for agricultural commodities. And so we've seen inflows or financial flows switch and fluctuate over the last couple of years. But once we get a stronger economy and some of the financial foreign money stay in foreign countries, then we can start seeing, I think, a weaker dollar and some brighter prospects for U.S. ag exports.
Over 400 people are attending the Minnesota Ag and Food Summit presented by AgriGrowth. Reporting from Minneapolis, I'm Don Wick on the Red River Farm Network.
A survey of ag banks in its district by the Kansas City Federal Reserve shows credit conditions continue to deteriorate during the third quarter. The KC Fed says the prolonged period of depressed farm prices has increased pressure on farmer balance sheets and working capital. Bankers are reporting more borrowers are depleting short-term operating funds for the fifth straight year.
Profitability in tough markets is a challenge, but that's where Cargill Market Guide grain marketing advisor Deanna Zwicker says farmers need a good marketing strategy.
You can really get lost in the markets if you watch them day to day, the anxiety and stress that comes with that. So we really like to create a tailored approach with goals to measure our success. We don't get lost in that. So we do have a bias on the markets that we pair really nicely with also setting those goals. So we're focused on financials and trying to maximize the most we possibly can out of the markets.
Zwicker says sustaining a farming operation is the main driver for Cargill's market guide.
Value is everything. So we want to maximize our profit and value, but we also want to make sure that we're tying it back to those goals so we can be in business next year and the year after and not getting lost in that volatility.
S&W Trading market analyst Andy Schisler expects to see more short covering in the soybean market ahead of the G20 summit at the end of the month. Schisler says there is more optimism in the grains with the reports of trade positions being traded between the U.S. and Canada or in China.
There's definitely more optimism. We're really, really low on a cash price, as we all know. And there is a lot of room for improvement in it here. So, I mean, in the last 4 years, if I bought beans below like 9.15 or 9.20 on the board, I made money. And this year, I can't even get back to 9.20 on the board. So, I mean, we're still super, super low here. What I would say is really positive, though, this week is we had crude oil get just really, really pounded in price here and traded down 500 points in a day, and the bean market barely went lower.
And Schisler is seeing an improvement in corn basis over the past few days.
It's probably gained almost 40 cents since September. And so, like, there's just a shortage of corn kind of out there right now getting into the elevators. I'm not sure. Maybe it's because the farmers really, really, really unpriced and they've paid storage. But it's the best basis numbers I've seen for 3 or 4 years.
Snow is impacting the northern plains today. World Weather Incorporated says the snow is expected to range up to 3 inches, with lower totals in northern Minnesota all the way up at the Canadian border. In other areas, moisture totals will still vary up to a quarter inch. More snow is in the forecast for northeastern part of the region late Sunday, with up to 2 inches expected. High temperatures will be in the 30s in the northeastern part of the region and 40s to 50s in the southwest this week. Temperatures will be in the teens and 20s. Saturday.
Sleet and rain near Grand Forks is delaying harvest. Paul Spruill planned to harvest corn today.
We're knocking over the 50% now, very, very close to that. We need about, we're getting close to 50%. We need to get about a good 10 to 14 days. It all depends upon weather to get our corn done.
And there also have soybeans to harvest.
The area that we're at here, we've been blessed with a very good soybean crop. We definitely want to get it in. It's weather-related. Just when we started getting going on soybeans down here, because of the earlier moisture that we had, it held us up, and then the weather came. And so we're still trying to get some soybeans off. We just got to get the right weather. This is something I've never done before, have soybeans this late. And a lot of my neighbors, as you travel up and down, or mostly down south of Edward Valley, over towards Carrington, even as far as Jamestown coming back this way, there's still a lot of beans out there, even down in the Kindred area. I actually saw some today. So I hope we get the weather to get them off so we can minimize any of those losses.
Excessive moisture is impacting harvest progress south of Brookings, South Dakota. South Dakota State University Extension State Climatologist Laura Edwards.
Unfortunately or fortunately, with the very cold weather we've had over the last week or two, we are starting to see some frost steps out there of about 4 inches or so across much of the state. Some of the colder areas in the northwest are closer to 5 to 8 inches. But we're starting to see some frozen soil out there, and I've heard reports of some guys being able to get out there even just over the last weekend to get some more harvest and field work done.
This is the Red River Farm Network.
Thursday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. Northern Crops Institute is hosting courses on barley and wheat this week. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Megan Turnquist has more in this report from the event in Fargo.
Producers, researchers, and those involved in the wheat and barley industries are gathered at the Northern Crops Institute for educational courses this week. Those in attendance are gaining knowledge on how their crop becomes a consumable commodity. NCI program manager Jenna Beertness says today's focus is the process from wheat to bread.
We wanted to offer it as a way for them to learn how to tell people how their commodity becomes a consumable that they can purchase. And so when we say people, we mean consumers, we mean legislators, so they can really stress the importance of their crop and the importance of what they do. And then what they're learning today is really starting the morning with some wheat basics, differences in class. We also have flour analytical labs that they're going to tour to see, you know, once that flour is made, it's going to go to have its quality tested so that we can make efficient bread out of it.
Yesterday, the Barley to Beer course was held at NCI. Beertness says the focus was, once barley is harvested, how does it become malt?
We had everyone from barley producers to, we actually had some local brewers that wanted to come because they said, hey, we want to know more about barley production, because by the time it gets to us, it's gone through a few processes. We talked about how the two-row can be a little bit more uniform and can make it a bit easier for those maltsters to malt that barley. And we just got these people in the room to learn about, once it becomes barley, how does it become malt? And what's the difference between malt and brewing, and how do they work together?
Reporting Agriculture's Business from Fargo, North Dakota, I'm Megan Turnquist for the Red River Farm Network.
Thanks, Megan. Farm bill negotiations aren't making major progress yet in the lame duck session of Congress. In fact, it may be up to the House to decide if they want a farm bill. Both Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Pat Roberts and Ranking Member Debbie Stabenow say House Agriculture Committee Chairman Mike Conaway is delaying farm bill progress. Roberts told Politico he wants the chairs and ranking members to sign a conference agreement today, but Conway has concerns with 6 titles in the bill. Conway told the Hagstrom Report this week the farm bill can still be completed on time.
Returning from a National Corn Growers Association training, North Dakota Corn Executive Director Dale Irie says there's about a 50-50 chance that the farm bill can be completed during this session of Congress.
The sense we get is it's getting close.
One way or the other, it's either, you know, right? It's at the finish line here. So one way or the other, we're going to know pretty shortly on getting it done. Timeline wise, all indications are they need it done probably by the end of this week, not later than early next week, so that the staffers can write the actual language of the many pages of the farm bill and then get it passed through both houses and then approved by the president. So that's a short timeline here that they're working on. And
Irie says the corn industry would like to see a few tweaks in the final bill.
It's pretty good. It's not any worse than what we've had. We'd like to have seen some additional benefits or certainty of payments on ARC or PLC. I think some of those things we might see some tweaks in the final version that are beneficial. And that's what we're working on behind the scenes.
There are about 66 new policy changes up for debate when the Minnesota Farmers Union meets in the Twin Cities for their annual convention Friday. MFU Vice President Brian Clabundy.
We got quite a few resolutions this year on, you know, finding ways to reward farmers that are doing the right thing for their land and their, you know, the soil and the longevity of it. And we're going to be considering quite a few of those.
The state of the farm economy is also of interest to delegates.
You know what? Show up if you like and participate, because it's a really welcoming group. You don't have to be scared to voice your opinion. There's every different opinion you're going to hear under the sun shows up at the convention during our policy debates, and you're going to meet some good politicians that you can visit with and voice your opinions to and make your voice heard. It's what we're there for. That's what we do. We advocate for family farms.
The convention wraps up on Sunday. For more information from the Red River Farm Network, visit Facebook and Twitter. You can also find stories, podcasts, and more at rrfn.com. This is the Red River Farm Network.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. Palmer Amaranth made an appearance in a few North Dakota and Minnesota fields around harvest time. University of Minnesota Extension weed scientist Jeff Gonzalez says farmers need to be aware of what the weed looks like to identify Palmer Amaranth next year.
Looks very similar to a lot of other pigweed amaranth species out there. So generally the first characteristic of it tends to be, if it's had a chance to grow, bigger. It grows faster. It is bigger than most of your other pigweeds. The seed heads tend to be very long, a couple of feet long, and kind of nodding because they're so big. And the female seed head is real spiny. So if you put your hand or fingers around it, it would pinch back. You would feel the burrs poking back at you on those bracts that are underneath where the seed develops.
Gonzalez says the leaf blade is shorter than the petiole connecting the leaf to the stem.
Number of farmers that have seen it or detected it also just noticed if they're in an area that's a buffer or something, they mow it, and then this one grows back really fast, faster than anything else. That's some of the early warning signs that you might want to look at that a little more closely. And Minnesota is structured as such, and North Dakota is doing a good job, I think, of trying to get on the early detection as well. But where we differ is we have a eradicate noxious weed law that requires people to basically destroy this plant.
Gonzalez is working to learn more about the source of the weed in the state.
Taking a look at the markets before we leave you this afternoon. December Minneapolis wheat down a quarter at 575 and three quarters. December Chicago wheat up 3.5 at 506 and a half. December Kansas City wheat down three quarters. December corn up three quarters at 367 and three quarters. March corn up a half at 378 and a half. January beans up 2 3/4 at 886 and a quarter. March beans up 2 3/4 at 899 and a half. In livestock markets, December live cattle up 50 cents at 115.10. January feeder cattle up 82 cents at 147.80. December lean hogs up 20 cents at 57.20. Thanks for joining us. This is the Red River Farm Network.